and a special dedication of merit this evening for Charlie the cat, wherever he is. So for this evening I'd like to speak a little bit about meditation. As we're at the start of our retreat time, our thoughts should be inclining inwards. We should not be getting distracted into projects, plans, external things. Time to put them aside. To just have a break from those things. Anybody who comes to me in the next 3 months with any ideas is going to be profoundly disappointed. Now's the time for closing things down, finishing them off, turning them inwards, forgetting the world, not engaging with it. It's disengaged Buddhism. Visamyutta. Disconnected. Silence, not sounds, solitude, not company, less, not more. Giving up, not grabbing hold. We must focus and attune ourselves towards meditation, towards mindfulness, towards clarity. We have to consider every moment, how can we simplify, how can we let go. Try to figure out, how can I be hanging around as little as possible? How can I be spending as much time as I can by myself? How can I get my work and chores done as efficiently as possible? Doing my work. How much can I support through my silence, through my mindfulness and care, the practice of others around me as well. Then we come to meditation. We should bring an attitude of of confidence and sincerity. We should know what we're doing. We should be clear in our minds how to meditate. Do it systematically. If we get on our walking meditation path, then walk very carefully. Collect the mind at the start of the path before you step out. Make sure you don't take a step unless the mind is collected and still. Each step, focus on mindfulness, keep the mind in the body, in the movement. Each step, each step, each step. Don't just drift up and down the walking path thinking about this and that. It's just a waste of time. You exercise the body and that's all. Each step, each step, each step. Watching mindfulness, each step, each step, each step. Keep on bringing the mind back. Each step, each step, each step. That's all you have to do. It's your only task. Only one task. And my friend Ajahn Sanguru went to Burma to stay at the Upandita center there. When he was getting his first meditation instructions, the teacher, the sayadaw, asked him, "Can you walk from here to over there, the other side of the room, without having any thoughts?" He said, "No." And that's it, that's your practice. It's very simple. Can you walk from one end of your meditation path to the other without having any thoughts? Mind completely quiet and still. And then move mindfully when you finish the walking meditation. Move mindfully to your sitting posture. Try to keep that continuity going from one posture to the other. And when you sit, really sit. Don't just sit there and veg out and fall asleep. Really apply yourself to your meditation method. If you don't know what your meditation method is, work it out. Be sure about it. Don't be in doubt. Don't waste your life away as a meditator just loofling around, not knowing what you're doing. There are plenty of good meditation methods and techniques around the place. Find one that's good for you and stick to it. Give it a good shot. Don't imagine that you know better than all the meditation teachers. once you've mastered that technique, then you'll know it. Then you'll know its advantages and its limitations. And gradually, as you get experience, you can work out for yourself what's going to work and what's not. But when you're starting and you want to develop, just give yourself to that 100%. Don't doubt about it. Your meditation subject is your vehicle to Nibbana. But that vehicle is not a bus, to sort of paraphrase one of Ajahn Brahm's kind of similes. Not used, he didn't really use it in the same way, but it's not a bus. You don't just get on and sit on and let it take you where you're going. It's more like a surfboard. You're the one who has to ride it for every moment and make it work. The surfboard is fine. It's perfectly good. But how are you riding it? Any meditation technique will yield the results in accordance with basically two variables. One is the character and sort of level of development of the mind of the person who's doing it. So that's something, that's what we're given. That's what we start out with. We each have a certain level of talent in meditation or in different aspects of meditation, just like if we play sport or we do school or something like that, we have different aptitudes where might be good at one thing, not so good at another, and so on. So that's what we're given. That's one thing, and the second thing is the care and the quality of effort that we put into it. And just like at school, we maybe find that we don't have particular aptitude for one particular subject, but still, if we apply ourselves and really take a lot of care and effort, we can usually get some good results anyway, even though it's maybe not as easy. But you won't get those results if you're just sloppy. If you just sit there to meditate and just loom out and just, oh, whatever comes up. To some people you talk to, you say, I ask you about your meditation, what's your meditation? Or what, like, I just sit and whatever comes up. It's called wasting your time. To meditate deeply, you have to learn to focus your mind. We have to train our mind. To learn how to how to keep our mind with skillful object. So, for example, if we take the breath as our object, probably the most common meditation object, the one that most people find useful. Everyone breathes. 6 billion people on this planet, and they all breathe. So the breath itself is a meditation object, but that doesn't do it for you. The fact that you're breathing is not the issue. It's how you pay attention to your breathing. This is the beginning and the ending of the meditation. What is the quality of attention that we can bring to bear on our meditation object. Quality of attention. When we decide to pay attention to the breath, then that's all we should pay attention to. Don't pay attention to anything else. We watch that subtle rhythm, the subtle flow of air coming in and air going out. Wherever it comes alive for us, and we fix our mind repeatedly at that point of attention. The breath comes in, breath goes out, repeatedly lifting the mind, placing it onto that breath, doing some work. In the early stages of meditation, we need a certain degree of determination about what we're doing. Not forcing and controlling, but a degree of clarity in our purpose. The initial purpose, the initial goal of breath meditation is simply to be fixed on the breath. And to help us do that, it's useful to not be in too much of a hurry to grab hold of the breath. So this is why we do a period of time before actually starting the meditation proper. Like Ajahn Brahm teaches the silent awareness period. Ajahn Mahachachaya teaches a similar thing. He calls like the how to translate in English, say, like the equanimous mind or the mind of just knowing, mindful awareness perhaps. And when we're doing that, we try to get a certain stillness, centeredness, distance. We try to let go of thoughts, attachment to sense perceptions, feelings in the body, emotions, these kinds of things. Just to be familiar with them enough that we're not so hassled by them. They're not unexpected. They're not so bothersome anymore. Just watching them, okay, and being able to let go of them. Just recognize it. Sometimes when things are, when we try to ignore them, they become much more demanding. So here, just let go. Let them be. Look for the place of stillness. And within that place of stillness, then you'll see that subtle movement of the breath. When everything else is still, the breath is still moving. So, again, at the start of the meditation, we want to pay attention to the breath. We try to focus on that with sort of sense of commitment. This is our task. And to help us with that, it's often useful to use some kind of meditation word or phrase or system to help fix the mind with the breath, stop us from wandering around. And you can use, for example, the classic Thai one they use is Buddha, Buddha, and chanting the words in the mind along with the breath. Whatever kind of phrase you find inspiring you can use, or else you can use a counting system. Again, there are many different ways you can approach that. A simple one they use in the Power Hawk system, to count from 1 to 8 and then 8 to 1. So 8 is a good number, the Eightfold Path. So that's good. If you want something a bit more, sometimes it's useful to have something a bit more challenging. When we meditate, we need to work with the mind as it is and gradually tease it and train it and incline it towards perfection. So in those early stages, then often it's useful to have a bit, because the mind's used to working, it's used to being busy, it's sometimes useful to give it a bit more work to do. So one system of counting you can use, you count in 1, out 1, in 2, out 2, in 3, out 3, in 4, out 4, in 5, out 5, in 6, out 6, in 7, out 7, in 8, out 8, in 9, out 9. And then back again, in 9, out 9, in 8, out 8, and so on, down to 1. Then from 1 up to 8, from 8 to 1, from 1 to 7, 7 to 1, from 1 to 6, 6 to 1, 1 to 5, 5 to 1. And then again, 1 to 5, 5 to 1, 1 to 6, 6 to 1, 1 to 7, 7 to 1, 1 to 8, 8 to 1, 1 to 9, 9 to 1. So that's quite a useful system. That's one I've used quite a lot, and it's good because it helps you keep track of what you're doing, and you can't sort of fool yourself. Like if you're doing Buddha or something like that, you can kind of drift off without really knowing it and come back, and you just keep on going with Buddha and you're... But if you do that kind of system, then if you lose track of where you're at, then you can't fool yourself. You know that you've lost it. You have to go back to the beginning and start again. If you can work your way, keep on going through that whole scheme, that's very good. That'll take about 20 minutes or so. And so if you can keep that 20 minutes going when you're aware of each breath, or even if your awareness might slip a little bit for one or two breaths, it still doesn't slip so far that you've completely lost the plot. So you're sort of not too far out of the ballpark. Then that's pretty good. And once your mindfulness is established to that degree, then you may be able to keep the mind locked with the breath without using the counting technique. You find that out for yourself. Maybe you need to keep counting or whatever. But the normal tendency is, or a common tendency anyway, is to deprecate the words that you're using in meditation too much and to drop them too soon, simply because we're lazy. We want to enjoy peace. We want to enjoy stillness, and we think that the words that we're using in our mind to propel the meditation, we think that they're a distraction. Actually, this is just a subtle form of Mara. What happens is that when we're meditating, if we're focusing on the breath and keep the meditation words going, that's creating a certain energy, a focus in the mind. Then when we stop that meditation words, then the mind coasts for a while on a sense of peace. But of course that sense of peace which it has is the product of the work which we've done earlier. And now we're not doing that work anymore. We're enjoying the fruits of that work, but we're not preparing the mind to go deeper. And so what sometimes tends to happen is that we're meditating, we're using the counting system, we're using a meditation word with the breath. We stop that system when we think that we're concentrated enough. We enjoy the peaceful and quiet state of mind that lasts after that. But then that peaceful and quiet state of mind gradually diminishes and falls apart, and then we come back to where we started from. Okay, so this is why I recommend to keep on going with those words until your mind becomes quite deep in meditation. Now, of course, as we're doing this, we encounter all of the usual suspects, painful bodily feelings that are piercing, racking, distressing, like sharp knives, burning coals. As the Buddha say, like his head's being split open. So anyway, just deal with it. It's just pain, we've all felt it. Pain, so what? It's just a biological system developed by evolution to help us to learn when our body's been damaged or we're in some kind of danger or something, that's all. Don't be afraid of it. A bit of pain is all right. But if you find that there's too much, then you need to change your posture or something like that. It's a very good idea, quite essential actually, to especially if you want to do meditation seriously, to find out and learn a bit about your posture through doing maybe yoga or tai chi or something, and maybe do some work with somebody who's got some experience in those things to help to show you how to sit properly, whether your back's straight, what kind of cushion you need and things like that. Often unless we've studied those things ourselves, we don't really know, and we can end up sitting in a less than ideal posture without realizing that some things can be easily fixed. But pains come and go, not such a big deal, not such a drama. We should reflect that these pains we feel in our body, the thoughts that come into our head, the memories that arise, the sounds from outside, we will reflect that all of these things are a hassle. They're all a distraction, they're all a something. They're an activity. And just to reflect on the just the painfulness and the sheer kind of stressfulness of those things, and the peace of the breath. You see the breath as a refuge, a home, a harbour, a place of safety. We come back to that meditation object. It's just so lovely to be with something so simple. To get in touch with this force of life. To get in touch with this part of me which I'm normally so alienated from. And as we keep on watching the breath, while in the initial stages of watching the breath, the most important thing is simply staying with it. Just being there, any old how, doesn't really matter too much how, just keep on doing it, keep on being there. Then, as we pay attention, gradually we're able to sustain our awareness on the breath for longer and longer periods. The propensity of the mind to slip away diminishes, and the ability to stay with the breath increases. That's a generalization, but that's sort of overall how things tend to go if we can stick with it for long enough. And if we stick with it through all of the stuff, you know, we get tired for a while, then we recover, our energy recovers, or we get very restless for a while, we stay there, and then the restlessness goes away. We're overcome with some kind of emotion of sadness or longing or something, and then we keep on staying there, and that goes away. You keep on just going through all of these different things, like the different seasons or the different weather patterns. We just keep on patiently waiting through all of those things, and the breath doesn't leave us through all of these changing conditions. And we stay with that, and it becomes more continuous, more fluid. And that fluid, natural breath starts to show a more subtle side to it. As we pay attention to that on and on and on and on, longer and longer periods of time, the more we pay attention to it, the more fascinating it becomes. And the subtle aspect of the breath starts to reveal itself. The breath becomes more soft, more pure. To feel like a very soft cotton wool or something like that, quite bright. And something about it is very nourishing. Something about it which just brings a sense of ease into ourselves, into our body. It's not easy to pin it down, but there's some kind of emotional engagement there. Sense of lightness, sense of ease. It's not easy to tell to what extent these things are objective physical qualities of the breath and to what extent that they are our own mind. We begin to feel like the breath is like this this kind of river of light. In some ways it feels like it's happening in consciousness, but from another perspective it looks kind of like it actually is consciousness, is mind. So we keep on bringing attention back there, keep on bringing it back again and again and again. Keep on sustaining it. Don't let the keenness of the mind disappear. It's got to have a slight edge to it, a slight shine. As the mind moves closer to samadhi, then everything becomes amplified. You'll notice this even in the very beginnings of meditation. For example, sounds become much louder. You're much more sensitive to sounds. You're much more sensitive to sensations in the body. More sensitive to the moods that you're feeling, the thoughts that you're having. Everything gets turned up, as it were. Mind is becoming more sensitive, more attuned. We are resolving the conflicts in the mind. The mind's becoming, is working together in harmony, in clarity. The distortions, the clouds aren't there. The distractions, the things that are getting in the way, not there. And so the mind works better. It's one of the things about meditation is that, you know, they do all these studies and things on meditation to sort of try somehow try to prove that it works. But of course, anyone who's ever meditated knows that it works. You know that your mind just works better. It just does its thing more naturally, more easily. So we keep that attention, keep that flowing along with the breath. And we see how deeply we can take it. Don't be content with just a shallow degree of calm. This is one of the biggest mistakes that meditators make. They practice, get a kind of adequate, shallow degree of calm. They think that's good, I've got enough concentration, I'll go off and do some investigation or something like that. I'll take up a Dhamma theme and do that, or I'll start moving my mind around, investigating things, looking at this and that. If you do that, then your mind will never know really deep samadhi. You'll only know the shallow stuff. If you stay at that one point long enough, you can get enlightened. You don't have to go anywhere else. Sometimes we might go other places. Sometimes it might be useful to do other kinds of meditation. But the Buddha taught in the Anapanasati Sutra that just staying in that one place, letting that unfold around the breath, even that can lead to full relinquishment, full enlightenment. So don't be in a hurry. Get obsessed with your breath. Become mad for meditation. Try to keep that breath in mind forever. Each breath, keep on watching it. Bring up that sense of determination, that sense of never giving in. I don't care what's going to happen. I'm just going to sit here and watch my breath. You know those wonderful stories about monks who get into things like the Nirodha Samapatti and things like that. Some jiva, a disciple of one of the previous Buddhas, he got into Nirodha Samapatti. Everyone thought he was dead, so they piled up a funeral pyre on top of him and burnt it. After the fires had burnt down and so on, then he came out of his meditation. He thought, oh, what's this? There's some ash around the place. What's going on? Went for alms. The local villagers were a little bit surprised to see him. But that's what the attitude that you should have. I don't care, I'm sitting here. They can pile up sticks and stones all over me and burn it down, burn my whole kuti down. I don't care. I'm here to watch the breath, that's what's important. Take it all the way down. Keep on following that one place. Let it reveal itself to you. Let it keep opening itself, layer by layer. So that sense of wonder grows as the meditation deepens. And the world becomes less and less normal. That's all I'd like to say for this evening. I have to open up if anyone has any comments or questions.
Namayang Dhamma Ovadakataya Sadhukarang Karomasi.